You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 8th of February, a tradeless deadline for the Jazz. What does it mean? Why did it happen? Where does the team go next? It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and trying to make sense of a tradeless deadline. It's interesting. I saw a report that the Jazz were one of only four teams to not make a trade. San Antonio, can't remember who they were. The only thing is, I think it had Minnesota and Utah in there. They already both made trades early in the year. So the idea that they didn't make a trade, they didn't make a trade in whatever we're defining as the deadline window of trades. The first deadline window really, by the way, happens early in the season when if you trade a player, they have to have a window by which they can be traded again before the deadline. That's actually the first trade deadline window. The Jazz took advantage of that, moved Alec Burks, who then got moved again the 2 months later. So if the first deadline was February 7th, then if the deadline's February 7th, there's a previous deadline that's actually about December 7th, in which if you act on, then your player can get moved again another time. That's a side note, though. I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This Locked On Jazz program is available on Spotify, on Google, on Apple, and you can tell your smart speaker when you get in the car or your smart device in the car to simply say, play podcast Locked On Jazz. So let's try to figure out why the Jazz didn't make a move. And by the way, I get it. Opportunity by which to improve went by without doing so. Last offseason, I don't know how that feels to you as a fan, but could feel the same way since the Jazz did the exact same, brought the whole team back. And I don't actually know what the window was there to improve, frankly. So, I think if you're sitting here right now in it, and you freeze time, it looks as though there have been two opportunities, one of which last offseason might not have been a big opportunity, where, nothing changed. That, in your opinion, can be either good or bad. So Memphis was unique. And you know what's interesting is I know John Hollinger and I know Chris Wallace well. Both are super bright. Both know the game really, really well. Both have been around for a long time, so they understand how it works. But there was no common thread to what Memphis was doing. Now, this does make you wonder whether Robert Pereira, the owner, is heavily involved in, or he's heavily involved in some things and not others. When a team is tearing itself down, as Memphis was, it would make sense if you could see a common thread taking place. So there was it's been mentioned in The Athletic. I'd heard it. There was a pretty strong rumor that Memphis had the ability to trade Garrett Temple and Jamichael Green to Houston in exchange for Brandon Knight and a first-round pick. And if they're doing that, then what they're they're at that point you're deciding we're going to use our space to get picks. The Brandon Knight has another year on a terrible contract because he hasn't played at all. And you decide, we'll take that, but it gets us a pick. So we're not going to be winning next year, so we'll take the $15 million contract next year in exchange for a first-round pick. All right, that's a strategy. Instead, they didn't do that. Instead, they traded Garrett Temple and Jamichael Green to the Clippers for Avery Bradley, whose contract expires at the end of the season. All right, well, that's a perfectly good strategy. That means that you are now just trying to clear space. You're just going to get out from all of your contracts and see what you can get. There's a $2 million guarantee on Avery Bradley's cont if he's waived by July 3rd. So, all right, that makes sense. You're clearing cap space. However, then they go and trade Jonas Valanciunas or trade for Jonas Valanciunas. And if they're trading for Jonas Valanciunas, then that's confusing because next year Jonas Valanciunas has a player option at $17.6 million. And they traded for CJ Miles, who next year has $8.7 million on the books on a player option he's most certainly going to take. And they traded for DeLon Wright, who's a restricted free agent. So he's a young talent, but he's a restricted free agent. You're going to pay. Well, then they certainly, if they're taking in all those contracts, must have gotten a really good pick from Toronto. And they didn't. They got a second round pick. So now I'm watching this. And we were live on our show last night. And I have no idea what Memphis is doing. Usually you can look at deals and be able to say there's a common thread amongst the deals that leads you to understand what they're trying to build. So if you're the Jazz and they're doing the Brandon Knight deal, then you're like, okay, they're trying to clear cap space so they can use that cap space to go get picks. Which, by the way, if they're doing that, they should have traded Mike Conley to the Detroit Pistons and either got one or two first-round picks from the Pistons and taken back Reggie Jackson. If you don't care about dead money on your books next year because you're just trying to acquire picks, then take the Reggie Jackson deal back and get either one or two picks. But they didn't do that. If you're trying to clear space so that you can do it with the future, then take the Jazz deal of clearing space and get a first-round pick from Mike Conley and clear all the space. If you're trying to get multiple first-round picks or a young player and a pick from Mike Conley, then you're just overplaying your hand. Like, I'm a Mike Conley fan, and I think Mike Conley could have helped, but let's have a reality check. He's a 31-year-old point guard with a $30 million contract. I'm giving up a first-round pick for him. I think he's really good. I think he's unique in that he's been to the conference finals, and I think that there's a lot of value to having him. I think he brings great playoff experience. I think he brings a calmness, everything. I mean, he's just an incredible, if you watch his interviews, he's just an incredible dude. He's played, as I mentioned, he's played 56 playoff games. Like, he's been there, done that. He, from a Jazz standpoint, I thought he was a beautiful fit. He brought some calmness to the point guard position with Donovan there. He brought you veteran experience because he'd been around and could give, you know, Donovan and Rudy are really absent a veteran leader other than Epe Udo, who doesn't, you know, he's just a great dude. That's just because of the personality. He doesn't have basketball. There's nobody on our roster that's really been through it at any great level. So there's an incredible, I was all in on the value of Mike Conley, but you're trying to get two first-round picks or a first-round pick and a young player for a 31-year-old point guard who has two $30 million years left on his contract? I mean, point guard, it's changing a little bit, but I'll bet you if we go look up any of the projection systems, whether it's Kevin Pelton, Shoney, or 538, I would guess they have Mike Conley falling off the cliff. Right? 31-year-old guards are tough. And so he's going to get, you know, 32 and then 34. You know, I just don't quite understand what Memphis was doing. So that's why a deal doesn't get done. There doesn't seem to be a common thread in a rational player going on there where you can build a deal to make it get done. Or the fact that they couldn't get anything for Marc Gasol, and really felt they had to trade him because Marc had become pretty grumpy, and the fact that they didn't go get a pick for Brandon or for in the deal for Jermichael Green and Garrett Temple, maybe they decided they had to get a huge haul for Mike Conley, and then they didn't. They traded three of their five starters, and were left with an expiring Avery Bradley, who they may waive, Valanciunas, DeLon Wright, CJ Miles' contract, which is bad at this point, and a second round pick. So nothing that helps them forward. Stunning, really. So I think that's why nothing happened. Is the irrational actor theory. A bunch of names that we have gotten used to hearing and talked about have all moved. What is the impact of that moving forward? We'll take a look at that, and then we'll address where the franchise kind of sits and stands right now after a trade deadline that did not yield any new players or any quote-unquote improvement. It doesn't, by the way, productivity, as I talked about yesterday, it does not always mean productivity. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai. I was parked over at Park City the other day, right next to one of those little Konas. Love those. I was like, I'll bet that person loves that car. That's what I think happens. I was walking up the stairs the other day, and a nice couple said hi to me, and they're like, we bought a Hyundai from Murdoch just because of you. And I was like, do you love it? And they're like, oh, we love it. And I was like, yep, that's what did. I drove my sons down today. You may have seen that my Santa Fe was covered in a little bit of snow. The Murdochs are Hyundai's located at 4646 South State Street. It's also, they're also in Linden. That's where Blake's spending a bunch of his time. And up in Logan. If you're shopping for a car right now, take a moment and at least add Hyundai to the list. Find out, if you're looking for an SUV, what the Hyundai Santa Fe Ultimate will give you with all for the money and all the details. Find out what the Kona I was just talking about, which is their small zippy SUV, similar to the Subaru Crosstrek. See what that will get you for your money. And I think you'll be super impressed. Plus, you get the Hyundai 100,000-mile insurance warranty, the best in America, and you've got all the Murdoch guarantees of oil changes, safety inspections, all the things the Murdochs bring to you, extended hours of service to match your convenience better, price match guarantee. It's at Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. The other one out there for you is Homey. Now, if you're in the market to buy or sell your car, ask yourself, why is the system the way it is? And is the system that's been in place for a long, long time where you're giving away a significant percentage to your real estate agent really the fair, right system to have out there? And if you wonder about it, then look into Homey, because Homey was built completely for the purpose of revolutionizing the real estate industry. And they have really done exactly that. It's pretty amazing what they've done. Houses are now selling faster with Homey by 2 days. Houses are up selling, and they're not just, the houses that they're selling are above the market value or the market average right now. They sell homes for 99.3% of their listing price. And the amazing one is that you can go, you start at $199, no matter the cost of your house to list it. And then when you close the deal, you end up paying a set fee that is saving people on average as much as $6,000 if you're selling a, excuse me, I choked up about that. If you're selling a, you know, when you're selling a big number house, it's unbelievable what you save. So you really check it out. Homey doing amazing things in the real estate world, changing it all there for you. Text LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588 for more information. Text LOCK to 88588 for more information. They're beating the market sale price. They're beating the market in time on the market. It's the number one real estate brokerage office in the state of Utah now. Increased 240% from year to year. Why? Because people realize Homey's doing something awfully cool. All right, we've had a bunch of players that the Jazz have been talked about, and I think that's because the league looks at the Jazz unique power forward situation where Derek Favors takes the second fewest threes of any starting power forward and makes the second least. So only Taj Gibson takes fewer and makes fewer. And then you've got Jay Crowder coming off the bench who actually takes like the third most but makes the second lowest percentage. And so I think the rest of the world looks at our power forward position and says that's an area where they would change. And there's been a tremendous amount of movement in that position. You know, started last year, Bielitsa changes from Minnesota to Sacramento is there. Mirotić, who was talked about a lot, was traded from Chicago to New Orleans and now traded New Orleans to Milwaukee. Otto Porter, who's been talked a lot about, and I just really don't have any idea if he's really a four or a three, got moved to Chicago. Tobias Harris, who we've talked about a decent amount, got moved to the huge Philadelphia deal. Harrison Barnes, who I can't figure out if I think he's actually good or not, or if he's a four. I think he's a four. I really can't figure out if he's good. I don't think he's ever been used correctly, but I'd be awfully nervous to roll out a lot for him. He got moved to Sacramento. And so there have been a lot of the guys that we've all talked about, if that was something that was planning to be a change, was to try to go to what now has become a more traditional setup of fours, that there, that's been a lot of different movement. There's, I don't know what the price on each one of those would be, and we walk back through it and try to figure out whether or not, would have Washington, is there a deal that Washington would have taken? Obviously, their goal was to get under the luxury tax. So you could have probably helped them with a, we can just go to the trade machine and play these games, but Derek Favors and Tabo Sefolosha, but now you're without Favors and you better make sure you're all right with that. And they got Bobby Portis and Jabari Parker, which is two younger players, and neither Derek Favors or Tabo Sefolosha matches the timeline to where Washington is. So, I'm not going to go through every single one of these and try to figure out, the Tobias Harris deal is really fascinating. And I said that like all week long. I thought that was the most Mike Conley and Tobias Harris, I thought, were the two most interesting players. And they actually went the opposite direction of what you would have thought. I would have guessed Tobias didn't get moved, and I would have guessed that Mike Conley did get moved. And I would have guessed that Tobias Harris, with a on a three-month rental, didn't get a lot, but Philadelphia has the confidence that they're going to be able to re-sign him because they gave up a haul. You give up that much in your Utah, and Tobias Harris doesn't re-sign. Oh, my goodness. I mean, you really might knock the franchise out for a while. So you... Now, I think with what Gail Miller has here and what Steve Starks' presence built, what Dennis and Quinn have built, the more hands-on touch we can have with a player, that's our chance to getting someone to re-sign. Like, if someone actually comes in-house and sees what we have, I think, and understands Quinn's brilliance and the level of detail of the program that Dennis has built and the support they get from ownership and management, I think you have a chance to keep a player because of how well done things are. If we're just a neutral place and have to go, out-duel Brooklyn or the Knicks or the Lakers or the Clippers for someone, I think that's going to be an awfully hard thing to do. We can all make that decision as 48-year-old, parents of two, that we want to keep our life here instead of Los Angeles. But I'm not sure I know many 28-year-olds or 30-year-olds that are willing to do that. And frankly, at 28 and 30, I wasn't willing to do that. So that's a difficult sequence there for, to try to play that game with Tobias Harris. So anyway, I don't want to walk through each of those. But it does, it's a little like, you kind of wonder, Milwaukee's in a little bit of a financial situation, and maybe the intention is not to change our unique power forward situation. Maybe the intention is that uniqueness matches to what the Jazz want. They have an elite-level defensive group that starts. Zach Lowe has just written about it kind of constantly, I think, to the point of which that it has to change, and he knows it doesn't work, and Zach's the premier voice out there on the NBA, and so maybe we've all just bought into it, that he's right. I look at it a little differently. Let's not kid ourselves. Our starting lineup has a really hard time scoring. Okay, so, and you can see it every night. Now, that could be because of Ricky, or that just could be lack of spacing, and every time they throw it to Favors in a corner for a three, it's a win for the other team. Like, let's not kid ourselves. But if you look at it this way, the starting lineup is plus 2.6, which is just average, and and they're 17th percentile offensively, but they're 89th percentile defensively. So they're plus 2.6 per 100 possessions. They play about 10 minutes a night together at this point, maybe 12. And so I just have kind of grown to look at that starting lineup as a lineup we use during the night. Like, we, our starters actually don't play the most. Our most used lineup is the Rubio, Mitchell, Ingles, Crowder, Gobert lineup, which then gets into a traditional. We just, Jay is year four, shoots a lot, not very high percentage, but there's a huge value to shooting. And that group is 73rd percentile offensively, and in the 60th percentile defensively, and plus 14. So that's pretty terrific. And, you know, if we get into our problem lineups, our problem lineups are Rubio, Mitchell, Royce O'Neal, Jay Crowder, Rudy Gobert, and Rubio, Mitchell, Korver, Jay Crowder, Rudy Gobert. Those are our two big problem lineups that we have right now, that where we have played a decent amount of minute possessions, over 100 possessions, and aren't playing well. Otherwise, you know, our best lineup is Donovan, Royce, Joe Ingles, Jay Crowder, Rudy Gobert. That's, that line split 112 possessions and is now killing it at like plus 40 or something ridiculous. It's both brilliant, both offensively and defensively. Needless to say, there is the narrative out there that the Jazz need to change what their grouping lineup is. Zach has addressed it really well. I'm assuming that's where the narratives come from. He kind of sets the narrative of the league as a reporter and done a nice, he's explained it well. But I just view that lineup now as a lineup we use for 5 minutes that happened to be in the beginning of the first and third quarter, but we never close with it. And it seems to be, you know, holding its own while our more successful lineups are able to play. So I don't know that that's, you know, maybe there isn't a huge desire to go change that as much as we've all talked about it. But those players have all moved, and it does feel like Tobias Harris is going to stay in Philadelphia, and it feels like Mirotić will touch Washington, Milwaukee, and decide it's heaven, and that Otto Porter is now in Chicago, and I'd be surprised if they're moving him. They view him as a piece. So a lot of those types of players are off the books. Harrison Barnes is a player that, you know, I as I said, I'm not convinced what I think of him yet. I just am not sure he's ever been used correctly, and so it's very hard to judge who he is as a player. So where do we stand now? Fans' emotion and feeling on it. We'll touch on those things as we continue here on the tradeless trade edition of Locked On Jazz. Let me say this. I'm trying to bring reason and rationale and understanding to why there was no trade by the Jazz and explain the circumstance. I, from a fan standpoint, I got it. Like, here's a window by which we can get better. Add a player, do something exciting. You know, we have the roster flexibility. We had a uniqueness to the where the roster was with the amount of expiring contracts we have, that you kind of could rev yourself up for it. Like, we could have pieced, you know, we could piece $30 million of expiring contracts together. You would have thought that that could have yielded something in the marketplace. It doesn't seem to have been the case, right? It doesn't seem to be, and frankly, I think it's interesting to me. I've played around last night trying to say, like, so Memphis was an irrational player, and so I couldn't figure out, like, what I would be able to do on that deal. And the one deal that I actually thought I could have matched, if I'm the Jazz, is the Tobias Harris deal. So the Tobias Harris deal, the Jazz could have sent an entire package of expiring contracts to the Clippers and given them the same amount of cap space to have their, you know, to do what they wanted to do. The question is then, And probably Grayson Allen, right? Because Landry Shamet has been really, really good. But then four picks. Two first-round picks and two second-round picks. And that is just guts, that a 2020 first-round lottery-protected pick, a 2021 first rounder, a 2021 second rounder, and a 2023 second rounder. Two first rounders. Two first rounders for a 2 month rental of Tobias Harris. I just wouldn't have that guts. Because you miss and you've just ruined your franchise. But that's the one kind of, interestingly enough, in a window where you thought with $30 million of expiring contracts and kind of the situation where the team is, that you could have really made a play of the guys, that's the one I've come up with. And I just don't know that I have the guts to do that. So where do we stand? So let me just, I guess my point is, I kind of didn't follow through on it. I hear the frustration. I understand it. I got it. A window closed. You don't really care why. You just wanted your team to get better. 100 with you. Got it. Feel the same way. The non-rational part of me is 100% with you. Damn it. Mike Conley could have made us better, I think. I talked to David James last night for a long time, and David James, who got in a car accident yesterday and hopefully is doing all right, our thoughts with him. I talked to David James for a long time last night. Like, he's not convinced at all that a 31-year-old Mike Conley would have made us better. He was like, you really were in on that? Like, you think he would have made us better? And I just really liked all the experience and things of that nature I talked about earlier. But I think that's a completely legitimate point on his part. There's a chance he didn't make us better. There's a chance he's $30 million and you're tied up on those deals. And he gets old. You better, if you're making a deal for and paying, like if we traded for Tobias Harris also, by the way, you're also committing to a 5-year contract for him, max contract for him next year. You better make sure if you're signing someone to a 5-year contract that's a max deal, that you're right. And frankly, the 5-year money number doesn't line up with us great. Because Gobert in the middle of that 5 years becomes a super max and Donovan becomes a max. And that gets to be a little, now you're into the luxury tax with a team that's Donovan Mitchell, Tobias Harris, and Rudy Gobert. Maybe that's enough. But that's, Dante comes up in that span and you're not re-signing him no matter where he is in his career. So there's some real reason why even that deal that I say was possible from a 5-year standpoint doesn't work at all. So where do we stand? Well, simply, we stand in sixth in the West now with San Antonio losing. So we play them on Saturday to get to sixth in the West. And I don't know if we can catch Portland, Houston to get to home court advantage. We have not been great against above 500 teams. Internal development is the next step of improvement. And I look at our roster right now and I don't honestly, I think Royce O'Neal has made a huge stride. He's become a much better rim finisher and three-point shooter, as we talked about yesterday. Joe Ingles is off by a tiny bit this year, but his load that he has carried physically is the highest of any player over the age of 30 in the NBA. So therefore, I'm not expecting a different Joe Ingles in the second half of the season. I never, frankly, expected a 44% Joe Ingles again this year. He'd done it for 2 years in a row, which was amazing. I expect Joe Ingles to probably be right around, if you believe in the rule of 750, which is your first 750 threes, tell you what your next 750 threes are going to be in this league. Through 3 years of Joe's career, his first 750 threes were right around 39%. If you're going to get from 44% last year to 39% this year, you're going to shoot 36%. I'm just not convinced he's as nearly far off as people think he is. I think that Joe has just kind of come down a little bit in what's a natural kind of larger sample size. Look at things. So I think that when you look at that, Jay Crowder, who's a streaky shooter, I think is going to be a streaky shooter. So really when it gets down to, are the Jazz have a window to get vastly better in the next 2 months, it's Dante's return. And whether that gives us gives us something. I mean, Jay's shooting 33% from three. His career's 34. He has an outlier year where he shoots 40 at Boston. Everything else in his career is right at 33%. I think this is exactly who he is, and I love how high volume he is. Him taking 10 threes a game is great. So I think, you know, if something's going to change dramatically now in the next 2 months, it's the 6 months from Dante, the 2 weeks from Dante before the injury were him turning the corner, and that he brings an element to this team post All-Star break that we don't have. He's been out since January 5th, and, you know, we're pretty excited because the 5 games that he played before the injury were really good. Against Cleveland, he was great. Against New York, he was great. In those 5 games, he shot 51% and scored 13 points a game and 6 assists. And, hopefully that 5 games was really a big turning point because the 5 games before that, he shot 39% and didn't make a three. So, you know, I would probably lead to guess that maybe the more accurate is a 10-game sample size. There is probably a more accurate depiction. He shot 47%, 33% from three and 9 points a game and looked better. So that's exciting. Hopefully we see that, and that defensive prowess is there for the Jazz. So that's where we stand. I mean, I get it. I'm with you. Kind of a bummer. You see that window as a chance to go add talent and make the next step. And it didn't happen. I think hopefully I've walked through to let you understand some reasons of why it didn't happen, and that maybe some of the moves that could have happened could have been the catastrophic ones that go the wrong direction. Time will tell. But we're back at it Saturday against the Spurs. Big game, head to the Warriors, and then go to break. And hopefully everyone has an awesome, fabulous break. And I think this team needs the break. I think this team is emotionally worn out right now. That is Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Locked On NBA Today, Sam Amick reviewing the trade deadline with Adam Matas and Anthony Irwin. And remember, when you get in your car, you can tell it to play podcast Locked On Jazz.